This is kind of a fun project for a class.
Queer people being queer people, like making out.
Oh my god.
Do you know Rachel Stevens?
I do. I love Rachel Stevens.
Yeah, have it be this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Let's look this up.
Yeah.
We don't want the gay soiree to become something out of our control.
That's okay.
I love attention.
This is great. I'm like, oh my god, I can just talk. This is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Hello to all my girls, gays, and theys, and welcome to the Art and Activism Ethnographic Podcast Series. I'm Cynthia Jimenez, and I will be your host for today's episode. Today, we will be looking into the phenomenon known as the gay soiree. Now, you might be asking, what is the gay soiree? Well, I'm glad you asked. The gay soiree is a series of parties hosted by 5 queer McMaster students. These parties are announced and documented on the Instagram account at the gay soiree. Each party is giving a particular theme, ranging from corporate to futurism, and partygoers are encouraged to dress accordingly. The parties have gained traction in the local McMaster queer community, with the account amassing over 600 followers. The Instagram account then posts photos submitted by the partygoers, which I tend to perceive as a sort of archival of the parties. I have the pleasure of interviewing one of the hosts of the gay soiree for this episode.
My name is Amelia, and my house is a house that gay soiree is hosted at, and I run it with my friends.
In this interview, Amelia got to tell us a little bit more about the origins of the gay soiree.
I was in the art studio at Mac, and my friends came to me and were like, we have this great idea. We're going to invite all the gay people we know into a house, and we're going to throw a party, and we're going to have it themed because the theme is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And my house throws a lot of parties, so I was able to use my house, which is nice. It's free, it's easy, and mm-hmm. It's close by.
As a queer person myself, the idea and the space of the gay soiree intrigued me for personal reasons, but I was also interested in the way the space functions as a work of art, and got some insight into the way Amelia and the other hosts thought about the gay soiree and some of the processes behind the scenes of the gay soiree.
Yeah, and then we kind of thought a little bit more about it, and the intent was to kind of have it be a place where people can go and meet other queer people and become friends with them and be in a party environment where the norm is to be queer, and so it's a lot easier to find queer people and also just, like, to hook up with queer people and, like, make out with queer people because they're mm-hmm. all there, and the norm is that that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of assume that everyone there is queer, and it's just a lot easier. And you feel, it feels kind of like you're straight at a straight party because you have that outlet of just, I can do whatever I want here because
mm-hmm.
these are all people who are similar to me.
So here we can see how the gay soiree is functioning as a space for queer joy and queer connectivity. As someone who has yet to have attended one, part of the intrigue of the space lies in the way it is documented and publicized on their Instagram account. Amelia was also able to tell me a little bit more about the thought process behind the Instagram account and how the hosts collaborate to create and curate the theme and their online presence.
We mostly want to use it to show off good outfits or really iconic things that happened at the party, if mm-hmm. anything did. Like a little time capsule is how we pick the photos for the most part. I don't do most of the picking. My friend Charlie does most of it
because
he's the most active on the social media. But mm-hmm. Some of us, if we take good pictures, we'll post them on the account. We have a group chat mm-hmm. and someone will just at one point will be like, okay, we need to start thinking about the next one. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? And we'll all just send in ideas of what we want to do,
mm-hmm.
and then when we all have an idea of, like, what we think would be a fun theme, then we start to think of names for it, kind of fun and different, not just, like, underwater theme, but it's, like,
Diva
Drown.
Yep.
So, yeah, but mostly my friend Megan does a lot of that stuff, mm-hmm. and Izzy and Coco. I usually don't do much of that. I just get the theme. I go, that's great. Let me make some visuals.
Yeah.
But as the gay soiree has gained more traction online, Amelia reflects a little bit more about how it and its intent have evolved as they have hosted their various parties.
And I think that throughout it, that idea has kind of stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have come and had a little bit more of, like, straight-leaning tendencies or would, like, bring their boyfriends and stuff. Which has been unfortunate, but the main group of people that we know that have come kind of keep it this very nice queer environment. So for the most part, I think it has stayed the way that we want it to stay.
I'd also like to note a recent development with the gay soiree, where the latest one's location had to be moved due to concerns about safety and the party house address being leaked to those outside of the circles of the gay soiree.
and they had to limit invitations and plus ones to prevent overcrowding. So the party and the way it's functioning evolve over time based on the needs and circumstances of its host. Regardless of this change and some of the logistical concerns surrounding the gay soiree, I believe that some of its more effective functions stay the same. In thinking and talking about the gay soiree, its creative themes, and documentation of this creativity, or as Amelia puts it, iconic moments, and the way people dress up and are able to be openly queer at these parties, I am reminded of Martha Gonzalez's work.
In Martha Gonzalez's book, Chicana Artivista, she talks about the Troy Cafe, which was a cafe in East LA that created a space for artists to gather in. Gonzalez talks about how the most interesting part about the space was not the physical space itself, but rather the patrons that attended the space and their manner of dress, which, in her words, created this atmosphere of creativity.
In this interview, Amelia also shared with us some of her conceptualizations of what queer joy entails in conjunction with the gay soiree. And I believe that these ideas can be linked to Gonzalez's.
For me, queer joy is, I guess if we're talking about locations, just places where I can wear what I want, I can be with my friends how I want to be with my friends, and the people around me are also able to experience that freedom of not needing to fit into certain societal expectations if they don't want to, and also being in an environment where people are not judging you for doing any of these things because everyone else is either on the same page as you or doesn't care what page you're on and is just able to be who you are without fear of someone coming in and ruining your day or your night. And especially doing these things in environments that are typically not seen as the safest. Like, house parties are scary places sometimes. Queer joy is when I'm in a place where I do genuinely enjoy all the people around me and all the things that I'm able to do, and I don't feel judged. I actually feel encouraged to be myself and try things that I don't even know if I'll like, but I'm curious about. It really is a place of queer joy for me because I can just walk through a hallway and I can just see, like, queer people being queer people, like, making out, doing things that if they were to do in a normal house party might not be the safest. And that really brings me a lot of joy.
So, with this in mind, I link Amelia's conceptualizations of queer joy as curiosity, possibility, and freedom of being on these different pages to this idea of creative atmosphere or creative expression found in Gonzalez's writing. As where does creative expression come from if not from a place of curiosity and in exploring possibilities? This is manifested in the gay soiree and the themes they choose and the way partygoers dress up in eccentric ways, pushing fashion boundaries and playing with makeup and dress connected to the theme and then showcasing it on the Instagram.
A party is a party, but what makes the gay soiree special are the people who attend and plan it, and the way it allows for the creative expression of its partygoers through manners of dress, through queer possibility, through queer personhood. As we talked about in the art and activism lectures, in the creation of these generative and creative spaces, there comes conversations about what happens when the, quote, party is over, or when these spaces cease to exist. Much like how the Troy Cafe was closed down later on, the gay soiree will not always be around.
Something that struck me in our interview is Amelia's insistence on not wanting to corporatize the gay soiree. One can understand this in the most obvious sense, where they do not want to commodify the space for monetary profit. But I believe this idea of corporatization can also refer to the longevity or the structured nature of events. To pass on the gay soiree to the next generation or to the next of kin means that this space is something that can be owned, and its continued existence then functions as a measure of success or failure. In our interview, we talked about what the future of the gay soiree might look like.
We're all in third year, so we have one more year left, but we don't see it continuing after us because we've been talking about it. And at one point, we were thinking that we would pass it on to some people we knew for them to continue it once we left. But then we realized that we don't want the gay soiree to become something out of our controls, like a corporate kind of thing. We want it to be an in-the-moment thing. We are doing this now. Like, take advantage of it because it's happening now. And when we graduate, maybe someone else, we will have inspired someone else to start something similar or kind of become more involved in the queer community, but we don't want to pigeonhole this concept. We want people to be able to take it and make it their own and not be forced to lead on our own thing. And maybe we'll do something once we graduate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we see this specific version of this idea of the gay soiree continuing after we graduate. And I think there's something really nice about what's the opposite of timelessness?
It might be ephemeral.
I don't know what ephemeral means.
Like fleeting.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. it's a fleeting thing that it just really take advantage of the life you're living and the mm-hmm. people that are around you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't expect things to always stay there. Yeah, have it be this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
The impermanence of this space is perhaps what also makes it that much more enticing, not only for me as a researcher, as having limited time to examine the space, but for the partygoers themselves. This ephemerality or non-longevity of the gay soiree can be likened to the article written by Sean Mills, titled Democracy in Music, Louis Metcalf's International Band in Montreal Jazz History.
On page 354 of Democracy in Music, it reads, "True, Metcalf's idea of democracy in music never was spelled out in detail, and it remained both limited and fleeting. But, for the short time that it did exist, the group offered a sustained challenge to a political and aesthetic order. Regardless of this ephemerality, or perhaps even because of this ephemerality, Louis Metcalf's band had an impact on the music and political scene in Montreal, which Sean Mills argues continued to influence the Montreal jazz scene. In the same way, I argue the gay soiree, although as Amelie revealed, will only be around for a short time, has a similar effect on the cultural and political landscape of the queer people of McMaster. As Amelie urges, the gay soiree will not last forever, but as this moment in time, we should appreciate it. In the same way the band did, the gay soiree offers a challenge to a heteronormative political and aesthetic order.
We know the space will not always exist, and we can talk about the metrics of achievement in the gay soiree, whether that is how many parties are held, how long the parties are held, the number of people that follow the Instagram or attend or know of the gay soiree, to try to quantify the success of the gay soiree in this way is not productive, nor do I think it's congruent with the way the hosts intend for the space to function. And we can see this in the way Amelie articulates how they don't want the gay soiree to become this corporatized event.
Moreover, in Amelia's idea of the gay soiree as this moment in time, I'm compelled to think about what exactly is this moment in time, the significance of the gay soiree existing in this cultural and political climate.
Now, it is no secret that we are living in a time that is very scary for trans and queer people. And to me, it seems that the gay soiree has come out of and has been built not only in response to a lack of queer spaces for people at McMaster, but also at a time where our rights are being questioned and threatened. In the essay, A Lighthouse for Dark Times,
and as discussed in lecture,
Maria Popova writes, "We too are living now through such a world, caught again between two ages, confused and conflicted, suffocating and suffering. Artists feel these painful instabilities more deeply than the rest of society, and more relentlessly. And out of that relentlessness, they make the lifelines that save us, the lifelines we call art." I see the gay soiree as a space for queer joy. It is a lighthouse for dark times. It is a space for queer people to celebrate in these dark times. And if we are conceptualizing the gay soiree as a space of creative expression, and we see the fruition of this creative expression on the Instagram account, in this collage, in this archive, in this time capsule, we can like the gay soiree in its Instagram as art. I would call this phenomena art, a living and breathing art piece, an ephemeral art piece. And the artists, the queer people who are expressing this creativity, who are making art of themselves, making art out of who we are, making art for themselves to be then be documented Instagram account. We as artists, as queer people, we feel these, quote, painful instabilities more deeply than the rest of society and more relentlessly.
As we are hyper-aware of the way the world and politics are changing to be more right-leaning in its beliefs and thought processes, the gay soiree then acts as this lifeline we've talked about. It gives queer people the opportunity to express themselves safely and creatively, and this lighthouse and lifeline as hope to what the future could look like is seen in the way Amelia describes that attending a gay soiree feels like being straight at a straight party, in the sense that to be queer is seen as a norm, and these creative expressions which deviate from a heteropatriarchal norm are accepted, embraced, and celebrated at the gay soiree.
Even when the gay soiree no longer exists because its hosts have graduated and they are no longer in this time and place to create this space. Continue to do what we do with or without it. We live, we play, we love, we live, we imagine, we express, we resist. Queer people will always be here. Queer people have always existed. And queer spaces will continue to find roots in different types of environments.
So what did we learn here? The Gay Soiree is a series of house parties hosted by five queer McMaster students who wanted to provide but also partake in a queer space which was not a corporatized event. The Gay Soiree was born and cultivated out of a shared love between its hosts and their collaborative creative efforts to make something where queer people could express themselves freely. Much like Martha Gonzalez's Joy Cafe, the Gay Soiree's most interesting aspects are its patrons, the queer people which populate it with an atmosphere of creativity and possibility. The Gay Soiree was never meant to last forever, and instead derives its meaning from its ephemeral nature as a moment in time, much like Louis Metcalf's jazz band in Montreal, where hopefully its effects will be felt even after the party is over. The existence of the Gay Soiree at this moment in time is particularly important as this cultural moment is marked by political strife and tension. As such, the Gay Soiree is discussed in our art and activism lectures, acts as a lighthouse during troubled times, offering its partygoers and patrons a lifeline, a place of joy and resistance, and hope and creative expression.
I am grateful to have had this opportunity to understand the Gay Soiree and to look at the ways the queers in my own community continue to live, express, and love despite it all.
And a big thank you to Amelia for agreeing to be a part of this podcast, and thank you for listening. And maybe I'll see y'all at the next Gay Soiree. Bye-bye for now.